I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
From the number one sports site in the world.
Big names.
Bold interviews.
Beyond the X's and O's.
Welcome to the fastest 2 hours in radio.
On Yahoo Sports Radio.
And yahoosportsradio.com.
This is the Big E Sports Show.
With the one and only, the triple threat, the Big E.
Alyssa Walker-Campbell. The 6 foot former Sooner women's basketball player.
She can post, pin,
turn the volume up,
and produce with some of today and yesterday's biggest stars.
Alyssa Walker Campbell delivers sports the way you want it. Get ready to go beyond the X's and O's
with today's star athletes, coaches, and sports figures.
This is the Big E Sports Show
right now.
Now from the Quicken Loans studios of Yahoo Sports Radio.
Are you ready?
Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze.
Here she is, the one and only, the Big E, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker Campbell. We are so glad you're along with us for the fastest 2 hours in radio. And of course, our Major League Baseball preview continues. So as we continue to go around the horn this evening, we are now going to focus our attention on the AL West and the Houston Astros, who are coming off the only 300 loss season in franchise history. Fans certainly are having to exercise patience, and a new plan that is in place in 2014. We're going to see how it plays out. What are some of these long-term fixes? And it is always such a pleasure to welcome in our very own at Yahoo Sports Radio, Andy Pondillo. How are you, Andy? It's good to have you with us this evening.
I'm doing well, and patience for the Astros is a strong word because the city has completely lost it, but I'm here to give them good news.
Well, we are looking forward to some good news because, of course, the Astros, they are right here in our backyard, and I start rattling off the numbers. They went 51 and 111 last season. Please, Andy, give the Astro fans some hope tonight that things are going to be better. And if they are going to be better, how much better?
Well, things will be better. 70 wins is probably a goal for the Astros right now, which would be horrible for a lot of other teams in Major League Baseball. But for the Astros, just finding some success, starting to improve is the key right now, because you look at the last 3 years, it's gone from worse to really bad to what a lot of people presume was rock bottom. But they've completely redone the bullpen. Matt Albers, Chad Qualls, Jesse Crane, three solid veterans at the back end of the bullpen. It's going to help the youngsters who've struggled, who are kind of asked to do things out of their roles to try and close, try and set up games. Let them kind of settle in a little more, maybe doing more mop-up work, maybe someone to lean on. So it's a big key when you have veterans at the back end of the bullpen. That's going to help the Astros close out a lot of those games that got away from them last year. Many of their losses were in the seventh and the eighth inning. So once you eliminate that, there's still a lot of problems on the team, mainly just young players who are trying to get their feet wet. And the Astros are starting to have that conversion where you see big-name prospects getting close to the majors. George Springer, of note, should be coming to the Astros anytime, probably May or June, if everything goes right.
Okay, so the Astros, what I hear you saying, they won't perhaps lose 100 games again, but they're not, or are they? Will they be at least at 500?
I don't think 500 is a reasonable expectation. I think it should be a goal for them. If they finish 500, that's like winning the World Series right now for the Astros. But I don't know if they quite have the talent to do that. They have that talent in the minor leagues. They probably won't have all of their main guys up within the next season. So I think next year is the real target year. The Astros are looking to be truly competitive. However, I think the AL West, though, a lot of the experts around the league will say that that's a very strong division. I think that that division's up for grabs. And when you see something like that, I think that should motivate the Astros to try and be that spoiler team. I think they can win 70 games, and I think that they can be at least semi-competitive to the point where they can mess somebody's season up if they do something right.
Well, Andy, you are right on the money. You talk about the AL West. It is a very tough division. What do you see as the true strength, the core, when you talk about the Astros? What is their strength?
The strength for the Astros is their minor league system, number one minor league system in baseball, and it's going to stay that way for the next couple of years. You're looking at a Mark Appel who can come up sometime this season, a number one pick from last season. And then you also have Jared Cozart, a young starting pitcher, Brett Oberholzer, a young starting pitcher. And you look at these guys, a lot of these guys, they pan out to be number ones, number twos, number threes. They all pan out to be high-end pitchers. And that's not even going in deeper into their minor league system where you're going to find some really good pitchers down there who just aren't quite ready. So a lot of the season is going to depend on how quickly do these pitchers mature and are they able to get up to the major leagues, you know, all together. I mean, if you get two or three of them to just come up at once, that changes the whole dynamic of the team. So I feel like the strength lies in the minor league system, and that doesn't even go into Carlos Rodon, who's going to be the number one pick the Astros most likely will take in this upcoming draft, considered one of the best pitching prospects since Steven Strasburg. So you're looking at another guy who's almost major league ready right out of the draft.
We are so glad you're joining us this evening at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, as we take you through the fastest 2 hours in radio. We're having a wonderful weekend because we are breaking it all down for you with Major League Baseball with our good friend and our producer, Andy Pondilla, right here at Yahoo Sports Radio. Andy, tell all of our listeners tonight across the nation where they can go and check out. You've got some stuff online too, correct?
I do, at climbingtowelshill.com, all one word. Do a podcast there, Blasting Off, where I talk a lot about these Astros topics you hear today. A little more in depth. We really break it down and try and figure out what this team has to do to try and get back on the map again.
Okay, so let's head up north. Let's go into Arlington. Let's talk about the Texas Rangers since we're focusing in right now on the AL West. And of course, you just think back, just some of the losses that they have had over the past couple of years. Well, you look at Josh Hamilton, Mike Napoli, and Michael Young last offseason. Where do you see them headed into 2014? Because they've already had some injuries.
Well, looking at their lineup right now, I can say that their lineup could be a top three offense in Major League Baseball, maybe even a number one offense. With that being said, the Rangers season is over before it's begun. There is no hope this year with the pitching injuries they've sustained. Four starting pitchers on the DL, not to mention Neftali Feliz coming off Tommy John surgery. He has not progressed like they wanted him to. He's sent to the minor leagues. Kobe Lewis out, Matt Harris out, Yu Darvish with this mysterious neck injury, he's out. And then Derek Holland, he's not going to be back till after midseason. Number one prospect Jerickson Profar out for more than half the season. You can handle injuries to your offense, but I have never heard of a team going down that many pitchers right in a row before the season starts. Martin Perez, the youngster, becomes their ace and probably opening day starter. They're going to have to score 8 runs a game to win early on in the season. People always say that, you know, if you could just hang around 500 and tread water, you can try and get back. But every game counts the same, and I just see the Rangers struggling mightily out of the gate. If you don't have starting pitching, you basically don't have anything in baseball. They're going to have to score a ton of runs until they get those pitchers back.
Well, Andy, you are exactly right. Of course, the Rangers last season, 91-72. And, you know, they have the reputation in the past as a team that has scored a ton of runs. Talk to us some more about pitching and what we can anticipate there.
It's going to be tough for them. They lost Joe Nathan, so Joaquin Soria, who once was a great closer, now kind of a so-so closer. There's some question marks when you're looking at their middle relief. And then obviously the starting pitching, if Martin Perez is the best thing you've got to run out there right now, losing Yu Darvish is an absolute blow. And they don't really know how long he's going to be out, but it's a neck injury. And when you're talking neck injuries, the first guy that comes to mind is Peyton Manning. And, you know, neck isn't something like a muscle. It's not like a pulled hamstring. It's not like a pulled shoulder where there's this kind of timetable of rehab they try and work through. You know, the neck is involved with nerves, and that's very hard to figure out how long he's going to be out. So they're sending him to specialists. but that's the guy you can't rush back. And, you know, a lot of it goes into looking at someone like you who comes from Japan. The workload in those types of leagues, a lot of times you see them pitching, you know, every 3 or 4 days rest, maybe pitching closer to 300 innings. So when they do come to America, sometimes you get an older body than somewhat of the normal 26-year-old that you is.
Okay, we're going to continue breaking down the AL West, but first we've got to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with much more at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show.
You're listening to the Big East Sports Show on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Once again, the host of the fastest 2 hours in radio, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
The Big E.
We are breaking down the AL West. Right now we are zeroing in on the Texas Rangers with our very own Andy Pondillo from Yahoo Sports Radio. Join us online right now at Twitter, at eRadio Sports. Andy, tell all the listeners where they can follow you as well.
At Andy YSR.
Of course, the Texas Rangers, let me reslate here, last year 91-72. What do you think about as far as the leadership and what's going on there in terms of with their general manager, John Daniels, and the job that he's doing?
I think he's doing the best he can. It was kind of a questionable move when he went out and got Prince Fielder. I think that I get what he's doing. It made that lineup one of the most formidable lineups in baseball. But it was also kind of disturbing to me in the way that he was willing to go spend that money for Prince Fielder, yet when the Rangers were right there, right on the helm to win a World Series, he did not do what it took to sign a Cliff Lee, and then he let C.J. Wilson walk, and then he let Josh Hamilton walk. Now, you can make the case that, you know, Josh Hamilton, obviously a bit overpaid, but C.J. Wilson and Cliff Lee, two pitchers that obviously made a huge difference in their title runs. They haven't been as far without them. Mm-hmm. You know, they let them go. They wouldn't give them that little extra dollar that they wanted. And I think that hurts. Now it seems like they got a little more gun-shy after that, and they were willing to do that for Yu Darvish, willing to do that for Prince Fielder, willing to do that for Elvis Andrus. Don't know if those guys had the same importance that a Cliff Lee would have had.
Okay, Andy, let's continue to move around the AL West. Right now, let's focus our attention on the Oakland Athletics. And with back-to-back AL West titles under their belt, the A's are not going to take anybody by surprise in 2014.
They aren't going to take anyone by surprise, but they also don't do a lot to better themselves. Now, they did lose Grant Balfour, but they replaced him with Jim Johnson, so it's kind of a fair trade-off at the closer position. Went and got Scott Kazmir. Good little deal, adds depth to the pitching staff, and already a very young pitching staff, so you need to add someone like Kazmir that can eat those innings and can pitch in the number 3 or 4 slot. As for the team overall, they often depend on guys to have incredible years. Last year, Josh Donaldson did. Before that, Josh Reddick. So they got a lot out of these guys where they probably didn't expect them to put up that 30 home run, 90 RBI production. And when they don't spend money to make significant improvements, you continue to have to keep hoping for lightning in a bottle. So Oakland, while I think they're still the favorite in the AL West, especially with all the injuries to the Rangers, it's always going to be an uphill battle for them. Maybe not to get into the postseason, but how do you assemble a group of guys that make, you know, $30, $40, $50 million as your overall payroll and expect them to compete versus teams that are paying out $180 million? There's a reason there's proven veterans in this league to get 7-year deals, and A's aren't willing to make that one move to send them over the top. I think that hurts them in the playoffs, but I still could see them trying to win this division this
year. I have to wonder too, Andy, I mean, why have they lacked having a superstar type of talent? Some of those big names.
A lot of it's the budget. They have been unable to get a new stadium. There's been a lot of talks about them trying to get out of Oakland, trying to get that brand new stadium, get the fans back. And, you know, they're always competing versus the Giants in that Bay Area, and the Giants have been a more attractive team for many years. And it's just kind of a difficult situation in Oakland. I don't think that improves until they're able to move, you know, hopefully for their sake, whether it's in California or whether they go completely off the grid, they'll be able to find a nice home one day where they can actually put some more money into that team.
Okay, I have got a lot of curiosity as we're moving around the AL West. Talk to me about the Los Angeles Angels, because last year was certainly disappointing, and they do have, this is a roster that is comprised of some big time sexy names.
The Angels have one of the best looking lineups in baseball. And
amen, yeah.
it's hard to see them not competing. You know, we last year looked at them as a team that came off 92 wins in 2012, just missed out of the playoffs, and then came back and just kind of tanked last year. You know, Josh Hamilton, Albert Pujols, guys that normally very dependable, didn't put up the numbers that they're accustomed to. And you have to think, you have Mike Trout in that lineup with those two. Mike Trout could score 130 runs in that lineup, and that's not even an exaggeration. not to mention the stolen bases he provides. Pujols with that protection with Josh Hamilton, Raul Ibanez. I mean, the depth in that lineup is unmatched anywhere in the AL West. You know, you could say the Rangers and Angels probably go back and forth, but I'd say on paper, there's not a better looking lineup than the Angels, and they just got to get their health together. The pitching is thin. They're top heavy. Jared Weaver, CJ Wilson. If they can get two very strong years out of them, that gives them the option to go and make a trade to maybe get a number three midseason if they're hanging around. And at that point, that gives them a legitimate shot to compete for the division. But I still see their pitching being very thin. That's going to be hard for them to win a playoff series with the current rotation they're running out.
You know, Andy, I'm so glad you bring up the young superstar in Mike Trout. I mean, what a fantastic situation for him to be playing with such veteran players.
Yes, Raul is a great veteran, you know, a guy that hit 29 home runs last year and really came out of nowhere to do it. He looked like an aging guy that was finding his way in and out of the bench. But now he can go and be a DH for the Angels. I'd assume he can get anywhere from maybe 500 to 600 at-bats this year playing, you know, quite a few games. So that depth he adds, the leadership he adds, and, you know, a guy that's come up with a lot of big hits with the Yankees. He was kind of a superstar that one year where they are pinch hitting him for A-Rod, and he had the heroic home runs. A guy that's been there, he's been on some good Phillies teams, and then I think he's a great addition to the team. I think he can help mentor someone like a Mike Trout. And then if Pujols or Hamilton do go down, it at least gives you another power option to bat four or five, also replacing the loss of Trumbo, who got traded to the Diamondbacks.
You know, I'm curious, too, in terms of, you know, having such a star-studded cast with Pujols and Hamilton and now having Raul on board, how much that's going to help in terms of within the clubhouse, with the chemistry, so these guys can really come together and to be able to take it to the next level.
They're going to need that type of chemistry to get over that hump because last year, I don't know what happened. You know, I had Mike Socha's name on the hot seat. That's something you probably would have never thought you would have ever seen over an Angel and just a hero for them for always done winning the World Series and whatnot. So they got to get back to where they belong, and a lot of it just starts with the pitching. Even if the chemistry is an A-plus over there, if they're not able to build some depth in that pitching staff, it's going to be challenging for them. You know, it's hard to imagine a rotation with C.J. Wilson and Jared Weaver at the top not being good, but when you have a bunch of question marks, that's what can happen. Their bullpen has a lot of question marks. So, you know, it's going to come down to what type of midseason moves they can probably make. I'm not convinced that they're the team of destiny, but I am pretty confident they can win more than 85 games.
Okay, our final AL West team we're going to hit on. Talk to me about those Seattle Mariners.
Seattle Mariners, they're an interesting story. I don't know. I go back and forth on this team. I don't like the lineup depth. I'm not as sold on Robinson Cano as a lot of people are. He batted in some Yankees lineups. Not to take away from what he did over there, but RBI numbers are usually a product of the lineup you're in. You're looking at Robinson Cano last year. He didn't have a great lineup around him with all the injuries, and you've seen his run production go all the way down to almost 90 RBI flat. Well, that's great. That's not the 100 RBI you're probably paying him this huge contract for. And with Corey Hart as his protection in the lineup, I could see his numbers being right around that pedestrian number for him. You know, a guy that was accustomed to driving in, you know, 100, 110 runs, batting 300. So I think you're going to get good production out of Cano, but you're not going to get the $200+ million production. Corey Hart, you know, a guy coming off an injury. I don't know if he's your best option at cleanup, but it's something. The Mariners made some moves in the offseason. They tried to add some depth to that team. Obviously, King Felix at the top of the rotation, one of the best pitchers in baseball, and then a young stud in Taijuan Walker. They have that going for them. They have some pitching. I think this is one year too soon for the Mariners. And, you know, I'm kind of confused on where the direction is with that team. Are we staying with the young players? Are we trying to develop within? Or are they going to go out and grab a bunch of random free agents and try and piece that together?
We are getting you ready for the 2014 Major League Baseball season. And Andy Pondillo breaking it all down, doing a fabulous job on the AL West. And I promise, Andy, always an open invitation. We will be talking to you real soon at the Big E Sports Show and YSR. Thanks so much, Andy.
No problem.
We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead this weekend. Join us online at Twitter at E-Radio Sports, and we will be right back.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on Yahoo Sports Radio. Once again, the host of the fastest 2 hours in radio. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell. The Big E.
Welcome back this evening to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show, where we always deliver the very best on Friday nights. And in our next segment, we are going to tee it up as the Masters is just around the corner. It is the cream of the crop when you talk about PGA Tour majors. It is always so special, and I love to share. You know, my family and I had an opportunity to go back in 2007, and it definitely lived up to all of the hype. It was spectacular, to say the least. So tonight, we have invited the CEO of National Golf Schools, PGA Professional, Patrick Livingston, to join us. He's going to give us an update on a number of subjects. And Pat, it's so good to have you with us this evening. In fact, this is the first time you've been on our show since we've gone national. The Big E is big time. So it's good to have you with us, okay?
That's wonderful.
Let's start off by talking about Tiger Woods. Let's get an update on him because it really seems like he's falling apart and that his body is betraying him. I mean, he still is, technically, he's the top-ranked golfer, but we want to get an update on him. I mean, what is the diagnosis in terms of this bulging disc in his back, and does it require surgery?
Well, you know, that's the question. The back injury is the most common injury in golf, especially with the professionals practicing as much as they can. If the bulging disc is in the upper part of his back, he's got a chance of working through that and in time healing it. If it's in the lower back, and it's been in the lower back previous times, and he's taken a long time to recover from that, it's serious. It's the most common injury in golf, and they're working on it now.
Well, he's 38 years old. I mean, what's the future hold for him? Because when you talk about the game of golf, I mean, that's all about twisting and turning. I mean, do you anticipate a path that he is going to be able to play in the Masters and pain-free?
He definitely wants to play in the Masters, and pain-free it may not, and he may not be able to play. He's had, four or five back incidents over the last two or three years that have been serious that has taken him out of tournaments. His body's taken a real beating. He's had three knee operations. That starts to wear on a golfer that's 38, 39 years old. There's a question, will he'll ever come back to the prominence that he was? Even though he's the number one golfer in the world, he won five tournaments last year, so it's hard to write him off. But injuries are something that you can't control and could have a devastating effect. Effect on his, especially this year. The four Masters were set up at tremendous courses. In the majors, he had first one at the Masters, obviously. But Pioneers number two is a great course. He likes Pine, and then the third course, the PGA, at Valhalla. He'd won there in a great playoff against Bob May. This year was set up for an opportunity to get those four more major wins that he needs to catch Jack Nicklaus, but it's starting to look not so good.
The CEO of National Golf Schools and PGA Professional, Patrick Livingston, is joining us this evening at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. Connect with us online at Twitter at eRadioSports, and you can join us at our website, too, at eRadioSports.com. And as we talk about Tiger Woods, I mean, we've seen Patrick, obviously, throughout the years, everyone knows this, that when he's healthy, he is flat-out dominant. What are your expectations in terms of will he ever win another major? I mean, we're talking, he's 38, but, I mean, does he still have it in him?
You know, he may win another major, but he won't win the four needed to tie Jack Nicklaus. He's got two children that he's spending a lot of time with. That's taken away from his natural, practice time. He's getting older. A good example, we had six first-time winners during the first quarter of this year. So there are good young golfers coming up with no back injuries, with no knee injuries, and very hungry to prove themselves in a major.
Patrick Livingston with us a few more minutes this weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. I mean, do you see Tiger Woods' career in jeopardy? I mean, obviously he's not healthy, but you really hit on something. I mean, this new level of competition, these up-and-comers, has really gone through the roof. I mean, you're talking about tremendous talent that is on the horizon right now in the PGA. It's incredible.
Well, it is. And like I say, this is the first time in the history of the PGA where you had six first-time winners in the first part of the season here. Harris English is looking tremendous. Walker has got a great game. Patrick Reed has a confidence and a long distance of any pro out there. Russell Henley is just he's a young phenomena. And it goes on and on. John Sinden won for the first time. Matt Every won. So he's got a group of young golfers that are having incredible skills, and they're not afraid of Tiger Woods anymore. Mm-hmm. They see a chink in that armor. They're going out there and they're playing their best golf and winning tournaments.
You know, they are fearless, and I'm glad you bring up Patrick Reed. He's, what, ranked 20th right now in the official golf rankings. But what about even, like, you know, you start looking at young golfers under 25. I mean, who's got a shot at winning the Masters this year? I mean, Jordan Spieth, he had a fabulous 2013. I mean, 9 top 10 finishes, a spot on the United States President's Cup. The child, he's only 20. I can still call him a child.
That's incredible, isn't it?
It is. It's
you
really
know, didn't
exciting.
He just go to his prom last week or something? Oh my!
So, what's been your impression?
The trouble with that is, it you know, in the history of the Masters, going back to 1937, there's only been one first-time winner. By that I mean a winner when he's played in the Masters for the first time, and that was Fudge Zeller, you know, 20 some odd years ago when he won in a playoff with Tom Watson and Ed Snead.
Mm.
And Ed had to bogey 3 out of the last 4 holes to create a playoff. And Fuzzy went out and won in the playoff. He's the only pro ever to win that tournament, first time playing it.
Well, what about Rory McIlroy? I mean, he turns 25 in May. I mean, how do you see his game at this point?
I think it's on top. He's had a great run in Europe for a few tournaments over there. He's playing well over here. McIlroy's, you know, just potential. Not potential. He's already a tremendous golfer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, could be the number one in the world this year if he plays well in a few tournaments. Just unlimited potential.
Well, it is an exciting time, as we were just talking about. You know, all these young golfers under the age of 25. Tiger, of course, won his first Masters at the age of 21 back in 97. And Jack Nicklaus, he was, 23 when he put the green jacket on for the first time. Well, we're going to transition right now. We're going to talk about national golf schools. Patrick Livingston is joining us this evening at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. He is the CEO of National Golf Schools. Tell of our listeners across the nation where they can find out information about it and just a good breakdown of what it's all about.
Great. We're at nationalgolfschools.com, you know, nationalgolfschools.com. We have 101 courses around the country and actually 4 international locations. These are the best golf courses throughout the country, plus there's on-course lodging, great practice areas. And we just you know, encourage you to go to our webpage and see some of them. We're at the Broadmoor in Colorado Springs.
Oh, yeah.
An iconic golf location. Reunion Resort in Orlando, for example, is the only course in the world now. And imagine this, Alyssa, the only course in the world where you have the architects being Palmer, Watson, and Nicklaus. Have you heard of those guys?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I can only imagine. I've got to get out there.
It is great.
They've
had LPGA events on the Watson and Palmer course, and actually they were setting up the Nicklaus course for a PGA event, and who knows, that may be coming around in the next few years.
You know what I really appreciate about National Golf Schools, because you've been on our show many times in the years past, you know, there's a lot of different golf schools out there, and one of the things that makes your golf school so special, I mean, you understand that each student has their own strength, their flexibility, their dexterity, and their physical characteristics. So each golfer is different, and your teaching philosophy is really customized to bring out the very best in each one.
Now, that is true, and we have small numbers, a fun 1-to-4 ratio or less. We do a lot of 1-to-1 ratios. You know, fellas or girls will come down and want to seriously work on their game. We'll set up a 5-day golf school, spend the morning a half full swing, half short game, and then play with them 18 holes in the afternoon. And it's a wonderful way to work in your golf game and improve. And we offer that all our locations, and each of our locations are a result, I mean, rather a resort golf location. You have fine dining, you have great lodging, you have great golf.
Spa.
Great, you know, range, and all PGA pros, you know, men and women, providing instruction.
Patrick, also, you know, every year we go out to the U.S. Kids World Championships in Pinehurst, North Carolina. Tell the listeners where they can go and perhaps check out one of your golf schools out there as well.
Well, again, just go to nationalgolfschools.com, flip on you know, North Carolina, and you'll see the golf schools that we have there. We've done it by, you know, state by state, and you can get all the details, some great pictures. Most of our locations have spas to kind of get you taken care of after a hard day on the range.
Uh-huh.
So they're nice. And Pinehurst is wonderful. I know you've been there. It's an iconic location with just wonderful, wonderful golf courses.
Well, you'll love it. And, of course, again, that's nationalgolfschools.com. They all have championship golf courses, great hotels. Patrick, we sincerely appreciate you dropping by Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Keep teeing it up, and hopefully our paths will cross real soon. Thank you, Pat.
Thank you for having me. I'll see you in Pinehurst.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead this weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Join us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. And, of course, go to Patrick Livingston's website, nationalgolfschools.com. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Once again, the host of the fastest 2 hours in radio. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
The Big E.
Okay, welcome back to the fastest 2 hours in radio. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell, and as always, we are hitting on a variety of subjects, but right now we're going to change things up a bit. We're headed into Lincoln, Nebraska with our weekly Under the Helmet segment with our favorite Husker, the one and only, the great Jason Peter. How are you, Jay?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm so glad spring is finally here. Are things starting to warm up a bit up there?
Finally, about midway through the week, I think we put the cold behind us and the warm weather started to blow in. So we're talking about maybe 75 on Sunday.
Wow.
Which, would be a nice break from this brutal winter.
Oh, it was certainly brutal, no doubt about that. Well, I want to pick up where we left off last week, talking about and breaking down the spring practice report for the Huskers. But before we do that, I know that, you know, you texted me this week and said the top discussion point you want to hit on is what the Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban said, that he believes the NFL will implode. So that is our opening point. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, I mean, this, I like Mark Cuban. I really do. And it's funny because my father, an immigrant from Germany, came over, you know, when he was 25. He saw an interview that Mark did with, golly, the British guy on, I think, CNN. I forget, is Piers Morgan. And my father was just fascinated with him, and it was like, Dad, is this the first time you've ever heard of Mark Cuban? And sometimes I think, you know, people in, you know, my parents' generation, you know, sometimes maybe they're not in tune with everything, but, you know, he's relevant, and he's a figure, I think, that most people know. And when he speaks, people, you know, have listened to him. He's been successful. He knows what he's talking about. But I also know that sometimes these guys who are, you know, involved with the media, and I know, being somebody, you know, on the radio, you tend to exaggerate sometimes. You know, you paint the picture a little brighter than what it maybe is, or darker than what it is. And he made some legitimate, I think, concerns, issues, whatever you want to call them. But, you know, I think the NFL is on solid ground. Obviously, what he says is forecasted for 10 years. You know, he mentioned the greed and the saturation of the TV market, the concussion issue, off-the-field behavior. And, you know, I don't know if you can say the NFL has more greed than the NBA or the Major League Baseball. I think all of the people that are at the top of those leagues would love to be in the driver's seat in the pole position where the NFL is. Now, I do think there are things that the NFL is doing that could ultimately, I don't know if be the downfall, but could certainly be a black eye. I think them trying to get overseas and have a franchise in London, that to me just doesn't make sense. You know, that is, you know, where you're pushing it now. I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to have, you know, teams from Arizona and San Francisco, are they going to be flying to London, you know, for a weekend game? I mean, I just find that hard to comprehend or see where maybe that fits. I imagine there's going to be a lot of expenses and everything else that go into to not just those weekly flights out there, but just with having a team over there. And is that risk really worth the reward? You know, what is the ultimate, the goal, the blueprint for the NFL? Is it to have, you know, 8 or 9 teams in Europe? You know, they did that to a certain degree with NFL Europe, and it didn't really work. So I don't know if you stop at London or where they go, but – you know, with Cuban, you know, I tend to disagree with most of the points that he made, but he did make, I think, some things that I shouldn't say disagree, but maybe I don't believe him as in those ideas as much as he does.
Jason, do you like the idea, though, of the NFL expanding their Thursday night broadcast? I mean, why not? I mean, audiences, right. I mean, they're huge. The ratings are there. You're serving the fans. You're giving them what they want.
And they'll tell you if they don't, because the ratings will come in, you know, the same way you put Dennis Miller on Monday Night Football. It didn't take long for people to say, we don't like this. You know, they'll let the NFL know whether or not people want more or less. But ultimately, even if, you know, you expand Thursday night or you get on, you know, Tuesday night or whatever night of the week, ultimately, the NFL is about Sundays, and I don't think that will ever change. People, they plan, you know, their weekends based on, you know, whose house they're going to watch NFL games. You know, are people coming to our house? Are we watching this game or that game? And you know, the fantasy football, I mean, you know, that, I mean, it has, I don't know the exact numbers of how much of an increase the fantasy football has had on the NFL and the popularity and the interest of it, but I know it's been a lot, and I just don't see this thing going south. The only thing I think where the NFL can really, really, you know, hurt themselves is if they continue to raise ticket prices, and then ultimately you're just dealing with people that can't afford it. I mean, I scratch my head right now thinking how some people, you know, afford some of these season tickets. And, you know, a lot of times it's people, they put their families at jeopardy. You know, they take second mortgages, third mortgages out on their home so they can have season tickets to, you know, their home team. But I just don't see, you know, the youth football, obviously it's a concern. I think the NFL has tried to get in front of this the best that they can. But I think there's always going to be kids that want to play football. You know, because I think when you, especially when you talk about, you know, kids from inner city or kids that don't have such opportunity at their fingertips, they will always look at that as a way out. And let's face it, a lot of kids, a lot of the successful players come from some bad neighborhoods.
Jason Peter with us this weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell. So as we talk about the NFL, I mean, what's your assessment in terms of, I mean, how many days is too many? I mean, the consequences of too much television exposure.
Yeah. You know, and I think it comes down to the individual's preference.
Yeah.
For me, you know, I watch on Sundays. And, you know, if it's a good game on Monday night, I'll tune in, but that's not even a necessity, I think. You know, for me, it's, I'm more of a college football guy at heart, anyway, but, you know, if there's a game on, it will always be on in the background for the most part in my house. You know, whether I'm really tied in and I'm, you know, saying to the wife, keep the kids out, I don't want any distraction. You know, that's a handful of games throughout the season, but most of the time the games are on.
Okay, Jason Peter with us just a few more minutes at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Let's pick up where we left off last week, talking about giving the spring practice report and preview. We already hit on the offense and the quarterback situation. Talk to us about on the defensive line, the returning starters. We got what? Randy Gregory, Vincent Valentine, and Aaron Curry.
Gregory is a guy who had 9.5 sacks last year in his first year. I think it will be hard to duplicate that. I think the kid is an athletic freak. I just think that people, if they're expecting, you know, 9.5 last year, well, he should have 11.5 this year. I think you have to keep kind of your expectations, you know, not at a minimum, but be realistic. You know, they have a lot of youth on that defensive line. But like you mentioned, Vincent Valentine, he's a guy who I think the sky is the limit, but it's a matter of understanding what needs to be done to reach that level of excellence. And that's not just for him. I think that's for the whole group and for the whole team, obviously. This has been an issue with Bo. You know, they just can't seem to get over that hill. And I don't know if any of them truly know the dedication and the work ethic that you need to be a championship sort of team. But Valentine is a 6'6", 340-pound guy who can run. It's just a matter of, is he going to show up on every single play?
That, of course, was Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment, doing a great job breaking it all down. A special thank you to all of our guests and lineup. Patrick Livingston, the CEO of National Golf Schools. Also, Texas Tech head men's basketball coach Tubby Smith. Alan Maimon, Fran Zimnick, and our very own Andy Pondillo, doing a great job breaking it all down at Yahoo Sports Radio. I'm Elissa Walker-Campbell, reminding you to not drink and drive. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports, the Big E Sports Show. So long, everyone.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, like all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.